Hello and welcome to episode 90 of the Card Hoarder Podcast, your weekly source for Magic Online news, community, and finance. Be sure to check out cardhoarder.com for buying and selling Magic Online singles, buying event tickets, or just keeping track of your collection with the Card Keeper tool. All this with round-the-clock customer service on cardhoarder.com. My name is Connor. I am the host and editor for the podcast, joined as I am always by my two co-hosts. First up, from Card Hoarder, Nathaniel. How's it going, man?
I'm feeling okay after the weekend, despite the Patriots losing and, you know, no crazy finishes for the Card Hoarder team, although there was a few good things that happened, and we got some deck techs and some other cool stuff. So I still enjoyed watching both the Pro Tour, and I watched probably more than I think I've watched any event in a long time. And also enjoyed watching the game despite the outcome. It was very touch and go.
Yeah, it was an exciting game. I didn't watch much of it, but it was an exciting game.
What? You didn't watch the Super Bowl?
I didn't watch the second half.
Oh, even man. I watched the Super Bowl.
Even Dave, come on.
Yeah, but when I see Alshon Jeffrey's not on the Bears anymore, I'm just like,
oh yeah, yeah, he was tearing it up. So anyway, so I'm hanging in there and enjoyed it despite the outcomes that I was not desiring.
No, we'll get into that. There's still a lot of good things to come out from the weekend. Also joining me from Ireland, Mr. Dave C. Hello, Dave. How's it going?
Pretty well, Connor. How are you?
Good, good. Yeah, good weekend. I loved watching some Magic. I think I watched a lot more Magic than football. Definitely glad the Patriots lost. Whatever. Come at me,
yeah,
Nathaniel.
I decided I shouldn't get upset because we've won, like, infinite Super Bowls recently, so it would sound really crappy if I was like, oh, I'm so frustrated.
So you lost, but at least the inhabitants of your city aren't tearing it apart from the outside in.
I think that was going to happen in Philadelphia regardless of what they won or lost.
So. Yeah. I guess it's either angry or cheerful.
Yeah, although I will say, same results. Back when the Red Sox won in 04 and I was here in college, like, it was pretty insane. You know, they had the rioting and stuff going on, such that I forbid my wife from going out when they won the World Series, because we were out when they won against the Yankees in that first series, and, like, we were in just this sea of people, and it was kind of scary, so... And, you know, that was when, like, that girl got shot in the face by the police and she passed away. So,
I'm sorry.
Which was hilarious. As
Well, it's not, it's, yeah.
It's how you brought it up. I think that's what was more funny.
Yeah,
I expected something so much smaller. Like when that girl, like, broke her leg or something. You know, when that girl got shot in the face.
No, it was horrible. It was like, I think it was after game seven, I want to say, against the Yankees after that epic comeback. It was insane, but, like, it was very scary. Like, people turning over cars.
Yep.
Everyone's like, why would you do that at your city? And I don't know the answer. People just get all drunk and,
yeah,
I don't know.
Excited. I think it was just a part of the times. I know early in the 90s when the Bulls won all the championships, there was definitely way too much, like, rioting and cars being turned over. But as of late, like, when the Cubs won, it was a lot more tame. In more present times, I think people were more aware, and I think having cameras everywhere, people having, like, cameras on their cell phones, definitely, like, I should probably behave a little bit more.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's because we win so much, it's not even that exciting.
No.
It's not even that exciting anymore. Like, we, you know, it's just, we won another championship. No biggie.
We're moving on from that. speaking of winning, though, Jerry Thompson, my buddy, I got to cheer him on, so that was probably my favorite part of the weekend. Even though he didn't get the victory, you know, whatever. Can't win them all. $20,000 still isn't too bad, so.
Second place seems decent. I mean, it's not terrible.
Pretty good conversion rate, so I'm very happy for Jerry. He's apparently donating his second place trophy to charity again, so Jerry continues to be awesome guy, Jerry.
In talks for Hall of Fame this year, probably?
Yeah, that's, you know, we talked about that on the cast, and he was like, whatever. I'm like, Jerry, I know you're going to top 8 again. Like, this is going to happen, so really happy for him.
I was watching him and rooting for him. I think I saw him most of the coverage that I watched. But, you know, he's on the Metagame Gurus now, and now they're sponsored by MTGO Traders. So it's, you know, it's a little tough to...
Rivals.
I know. Well, they have, like, 5 teams now. I mean, they're outpacing even us. I think it's only 3, actually, but it's a lot of teams.
Well, I will start on a sour note. I have to say rest in peace to Corey McDuffie, a Magic player that I didn't know very well, but he passed away this weekend. I covered many of his matches on the SCG circuit. Actually, I had a few beers with his crew a few years back as well. So I had some discussions with him, but didn't know him very well. But always very sad to see someone go so young in the community, and he was very well beloved by a lot of people in the community as well. So sad to see Corey go. I hope his family is recovering from this tragedy. And I know a lot of the community has been putting together funds to donate to the family. So I'm glad the community is taking some steps to help out.
Yeah, it's we do have a very together community in that regard. A bit of a morbid thought. I always think, you know, Magic is getting quite old now. At what point do we get this sad kind of, you know, like we did celebrities a couple of years ago.
Wrestlers,
when
do
older
yeah.
Magic players.
Yeah.
Yeah, like wrestlers did in the last 5-6 years. A lot of them have gone. When do the older generation of Magic players pass? I was just thinking a couple of weeks ago, how tragic is that going to be? You get them by waves. Then all of a sudden, someone so young taken away. But it's nice to see the community come together so much. And I wish the best for his family.
Yeah, well, that was just one of the big stories come up from the Pro Tour weekend. Because there's a lot of things. And there's a lot of surprises from the weekend, too. I mean, humans being one of the top decks in the metagame, that was the last thing I would have guessed for this weekend. I mean, this is a deck that doesn't seem like a deck that the pros would want to play. I mean, it's a deck that I would like to play because it's an Aether Vial deck, for sure. But as a Pro Tour deck, I was surprised. And this is a deck that, like, it's almost seemed like it was going to be a flash in the pan. And then it kind of came back. It made some big appearances in the field. So were you guys more surprised with that, or was there something else that was on your radar?
I was surprised by the diversity. I was surprised that it went off almost perfectly. So I don't think they could have asked for a better spread of decks in a metagame. I don't think they could have asked for a more tame performance from these decks. There's no standout. There's no, oh my God, it was so powerful. So I think that's what surprised me most, the lack of controversy, or I guess there's a little bit, but there's all Magic players love to get annoyed over minuscule things. I think how well it went is kind of what surprised me.
Yep.
There's some grasping at straws, for sure,
yes.
In terms of complaining about how things went. But I would agree, it seemed, you know, really interesting to watch, which is unusual, I think, seeing different decks, even though, like, a lot of the same players were on camera. But I think it was enjoyable to watch, and seeing the diversity in deck. Index was something that we're not used to at all for a long, long time in Standard. I mean, I agree with David. I don't think it could have been any better than it was in terms of, you know, coverage and being interesting, which is saying a lot, I think, in recent years.
Yeah, I think my other big surprise I have noted down here, lots of Tarmogoyfs being played. It was just last week, they're like, Tarmogoyf, not so good. And then we've seen multiple copies in the top eight, which was, I thought, you know, if I had to make a guess of how many Tarmogoyfs in the top eight, I would have said zero.
Yes, same. I still think that kind of overshadows how mediocre the card is at the moment and how powerful other cards are. It is still a fine, efficient beater for these mid-range decks, but it is no longer the, you know, the creature that rules the roost anymore. It's no longer the be-all and end-all. Just efficient and decent, and that's probably where you want a card like Tarmogoyf to be. I remember a couple of years ago, right at the start of Modern, there was, like, Affinity decks splashing Tarmogoyf because he was so big. And, like, there was talks about, should he get banned because he's so... he was, like, Wild Nakatal. He's just, like, all the green decks. So should he get banned? But or it? I don't know why I'm putting. I don't know why I'm giving it a pronoun. But it's good to see. I think this is like a perfect spot for it. I still think this is overperforming by the card. I don't think it's that good anymore. But yeah, it's nice. It's nice to see a balanced top eight like that.
Well, I think one thing that people tend to forget, and I think even with some of the pros, they complain about the modern format. It, you know, if you know how to play your deck well, then you can still take a deck that's not the best deck in the format and pilot it to a top eight victory, or, you know, top eight victory, but, you know, top eight or do really well with it. I think Reed Duke's a great example of that. But I mean, being a good player matters a lot in this game, despite what some pros will have you think about the modern format.
Yeah, I think a lot of the matchups show that as well. Like, a big scare for modern is that combo decks are dominant, that these super high variants, I was on the play or I had to write sideboard cards, dominate. And there's still some of that to modern. There's still your 80% matchups you can randomly bump into. And I get that can be annoying. But there was a lot of, like, nice mid-range and control decks. And I think that was really important because it made it very entertaining for camera. I know round four, it was PV versus Levy. And that was a super entertaining match. That's one of the first traditional out-and-out control matchups we've seen since, I want to say, Khan's block.
What about Kaladesh?
Or Kaladesh. Yeah, Kaladesh finals. Or Khan's Dragons versus Dragons. Control Dragons versus Control Dragons, or whatever we were calling it then. Esper Dragons. So I think that was really cool. It was like the first one we've seen in a while where all the win conditions just cancel each other out, so it has to go to decking. When's the last time we've seen that happen? It's different. Maybe it's not everyone's cup of tea. And Control Magic and Lanterns, another controversial one. Not everyone's going to enjoy watching those because people get locked out of the game. But it is going to interest some people. It needs to be a bit like a circus, you know. If you don't like the Control matchup, it's okay. Next round is going to be something different. And that's what's nice about Modern. It's how it kind of worked out for this.
So we've definitely said a bunch of positive things here. I'm going to take a page out of Dave. I'm actually going to get a little negative here, if that's okay with you guys.
But that's my page? What?
That is absolutely Dave's
come
page.
Come on, that's totally your page. There's actually a few things. I'll preface all this by saying, like, these are just like minor complaints and just things that bothered that I think just got a little overshadowed, I should say. The Lantern 9 narrative has pushed a little too far. I don't know why they kept pushing. I understand this is the deck to look at, but do we really need to push this narrative over something like, props to Andrew Schaff for pointing this out, the narrative that was kind of just skimmed over in coverage that South America has now won 3 out of the last 5 Pro Tours, which is pretty impressive. I don't think that was ever mentioned, really. That should have been a huge storyline coming into this. It seems like, oh, the deck is the more important thing. Again, we've always talked about that. Wizards like to push cards instead of human beings, and I think this is the perfect example of that. It's hard to push a guy like Luis Favela. I mean, no disrespect to him. He's, you know, well-deserved Pro Tour champion, but he's definitely not a markable star compared to Jerry or Reed Duke, so I understand that. But you got to start somewhere. You got to push something to get it started. Or I should say continue the narrative further. But that was just like a minor complaint, whatever. I don't know. I think Wizards kind of got lucky with this tournament in top 8. Like, I say this in response to tweets from Saffron and the Professor. They were boasting about how awesome Modern was to be back on the Pro Tour. I mean, the format does deserve some credit, but you have to, like, credit a few key things for viewership being, like, this high, because it was, like, over 40,000, there were 45 or something like that. It was, like, Pro Tour Amaket numbers. There's some similarities here. Jerry Thompson, of course, he was in first and second place, respectively, at these Pro Tours, so that is definitely a thing. Reed Duke making top 8 for this one doesn't hurt either. Besides the two beloved pros making top 8, Ken's Hollowed One deck, it was just a joy to watch on camera. Imagine if you replace, like, Jerry with another Lantern pilot, or maybe you take Lantern instead of the Hollowed One deck. Like, if you have, like, Lantern Mirrors in the top 8, like, we might be having a different discussion right now.
Yeah, 100%, and there's always that risk. We're Modern. I think that a deck dominates like that, even when it's in small numbers, because it's such a good choice for the day, or they've kind of broken a little bit. And we have to remember that I think some of the Pro Tour numbers have been low, because the last 3 Pro Tours have all been super correct, predictable decks that we knew were coming and that we knew were probably broken. Like, we got one of them, we got wrong. We were like, oh, we think the cat combo is going to be broken for this Pro Tour. It wasn't. But instead, Mardu was like 7 of the 8 top 8 decks. And then after that, the cat combo became broken when people put it in the correct deck. So, and then we had a mono red one where everyone knew mono red would be good. So much that I didn't even play it. I didn't want to be given that unfair advantage to Pro Tour. I didn't even play the mono red deck. But after that, you know, there's just lots of decks we knew were going to be broken for the last year, and a standard that's been consistently broken for a year and a half. So while I do think there's interest in Modern, and having it once in a while as a Pro Tour format will spike viewership because people are so excited for the once a year kind of thing, I do think we have to take it into perspective of how bad the formats have been for a while, the standard format has been for viewership.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel a little bit, though, like, you know, standard is just not as popular.
It didn't used to be like that, though. I mean, remember being so excited to watch standard PTs, though. It's just like a weird shift.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, obviously, it's not been as good in recent years, certainly as some other periods of time. But just the sheer number of decks that can be played when you're able to pick out your feature matches and show what's on, you know, on camera, and sort of craft that and show something interesting, I think that that makes a big difference than if, you know, the whole field is on one of three decks and you're by round five, you've got nothing new to show anybody. So I think that just the way Modern exists and the number of viable decks out there, I mean, I guess lucky is sort of a way to describe it, but I think the same could be said of Legacy and Vintage, though I think those are a little bit more difficult to relate to for the average player, just given the cost of the decks. But you know, everybody can play Modern, and with the sheer number of decks available, I just think that it's nice. And we've talked about how we like having it, but you know, I think we've tossed around maybe every other year sort of thing as a suggestion, and I think that would make a big difference to the viewership and the Pro Tour generally.
Yeah, that's what I have in my notes. That's what I would love to see. I don't want to see it every year. I guess my ultimate point is they're making it seem like this format is untouchable. It can definitely be amazing, and it was, because it is a great format. But I just want to mention, like, keep in mind that we could have the Pro Tour Return to Ravnica type of tournaments and type of viewing experience. And I mean, for the most part, this was a good view experience, but you know, watching the finals, that was just super boring, and I didn't even watch the last game. I'm like, oh, I know what's gonna happen. Even though they were sideboarding games, I'm just like, this guy's playing too well, he's drawing so well, I'm like, there's no way he can lose here, so just forget it. And
yeah,
it's just very high variance of entertainment value. My
Modern has a high ceiling, low floor, right? So when it's perfect, it's mm-hmm. this, you know, it's a format that's interesting. You know, there's some arguments coming out of the Pro Tour what decks might become dominant. It was a very well-balanced Pro Tour, and it was a lot of fun to watch, and there's hundreds of different decks to choose from. When it's Eldrazi Winter, you got to ban cards, and it's awful. It's awful to watch. It's awful player experience. So, you know, some players were complaining about being in this Modern Pro Tour as one of their Pro Tours. You know, not everyone gets to go to many, and how high variance it is. Imagine if you were one of the people to go to the Eldrazi Pro Tour that didn't bring Eldrazi. How high variance does that feel when you definitely can't top eight? You know what I mean? It's just, I like it as a sometimes thing. Also, as I've said, Wizards go overboard and they tend to go, you know, you liked it, let's have 100 of it. All the Pro Tours are Modern now. You know, I would love if they kept it once a year, because then it's special. I would guarantee if you made this every Pro Tour, every second Pro Tour, there'd be less views within a year. And then they blame it on something else, but it's because it's not as special anymore. If you keep it a once a year, once every 2 years thing, people are going to get super excited for when the Modern Pro Tour happens.
I'm glad to see it succeed. I'm glad that it's kind of back, and I think we're definitely going to have it again. You would think. So who knows? I don't think they've made any announcements really per se of if they're having it again, because I don't think they announced the schedule for 2019 or anything. Yet. So I think it should come back at some point. I'm hoping it does. I think it will.
I think it will too, but Dave points out the risk, and that is true of anything WotC does seemingly in recent years.
Yeah, that's true.
It's good, and it just let's just destroy it by making it common. So hopefully there is not one next year. I mean, I'd rather there be a something, some other Pro Tour, and have it be Vintage or Legacy next year instead. You know what I mean? But I don't think that'll happen. But they do need to be careful about keeping it interesting.
Yep. So all in all, it's success all around. But there were some awkward moments from the Pro Tour. I mean, round 15, that was a thing for sure.
Oh, God.
So I'm going to throw it over to Dave for a breakdown for the card-holder-exclusive Nerd Drama Report. Dave, take it away.
So this really weird thing happened where instead of covering the PT for a round, they went to Puntsville, USA and decided to, you know, do a bit of F&M coverage for the locals. Obviously, the last round of a Pro Tour is very nervous, and I don't mean to pick on the players too much. But people made mistakes over the weekend. So there's a couple of interesting mistakes we can point out and discuss from some very good players that uncharacteristically make mistakes. I think Modern is a complex format, especially if you don't play it very often. You're not used to these interactions. But the last round, people made, you know, mistakes you wouldn't be making after your first couple sanctioned tournaments. Salvato, our champion, forgot to de-sideboard. He thought he was locked for top 8, so obviously forgot to de-sideboard. And then when searching for a Winterbane Orb, I think is the name of the card.
Witchbane Orb. Innistrad Classic. Innistrad's amazing.
Yeah, with a World of Invention, he only could find a 2 Grafdigger's Cage. What's even more bizarre about this is the judge then punts the judge call. The correct answer to that is he gets a warning and the card gets switched back in. Because he hasn't drawn one of these Grafdigger's Cage, he's searching for it. And why the judge did not let him change it, because the rule in general is if you draw it and you know exactly which card it replaced, you can replace it and just get a warning now. They've changed those rules in the recent years. The judge's argument is we don't know which Grafdigger's Cage it is. But Salvato hasn't drawn either Grafdigger's Cage, so it doesn't actually matter which Grafdigger's Cage it is, if it's Grafdigger's Cage A or B. So the judge gives him, you know, we can't repair the game. You get a game loss, we go to the next one. But Salvato should have won that game, because once he gets the Witchbane Orb, the game is locked out. So massive punt by our Pro Tour champion, but massive punt by a very high-level judge. It was very bizarre talking to my friends, where I'm like, oh, this is just a warning. It doesn't matter. And then I'm shown up a couple of seconds later by this call, and it's really weird. While they're making that call, they flash to another table with Andrea Mungucci playing. Andrea very obviously draws a card and forgets about his Kataki's War Wage, which affects his own Aether Vials, which ends up being really important because he can get a Reflector Mage and play off one of these Aether Vials to just kill any chance his opponent has of winning the game. But the judge lets him go back and just pay for the Aether Vials, which I think is insane. I don't think it could have been any more clear that he had drawn those cards. So some very sloppy and weird play and some very weird judge calls.
Was there anything else? I thought there were some other judge calls in the weekend, but nothing else?
That round, there was something else. So this wasn't a judge call. This was a judge correction that happens a little bit later. So Vato in game two hurries up his pace of play. He's playing Lantern. He needs to draw the game at least the top eight, and his opponent needs to win. So his opponent's making him go through the motions in game two. And he has a Lantern out, and he Ancient Stirrings and forgets to reveal the top card, and then takes a card from his hand and shows his opponent. Now, it's pretty clear that his first card didn't move, and the judge went, that's okay, just make sure to show your opponent next time. But that's not fixable. If I did that at a GP, I'm pretty sure it's a game loss, because I haven't shown my opponent the information, and who knows, if I had shuffled around a little bit while picking up, people pick up magic cards very quickly. So that's another missed call by the judge. The judge at 1 second being super harsh on Salvato when he doesn't need to be, and then all of a sudden just lets him away without as much as a warning. There's a lot of small little calls like this and a lot of little interesting mistakes throughout the weekend. But round 15 had a couple of these just big what is happening kind of moments.
And it happens, man. When I used to do coverage, when we did Legacy coverage, man, if there was a blunder, they just seemed to keep coming. It's just like certain rounds were just death rounds for some reason. I don't know what it is.
Very early in day one, the biggest like jaw dropper we saw that wasn't just a judge call was Ivan Flock in the winning position with a tap Death Shadow and untap Death Shadow, and I think a Gurmag Anger in play. He knows Reduke has a Fatal Push in hand, but he has a Stubborn Denial for it, but he only has one blue up. So Reduke draws and plays Liliana, and Ivan scoops, assuming what's going to happen is he's going to counter Liliana, and then he has nothing to counter the Fatal Push, and Reed gets through. You know, he only has one blocker, which isn't enough to survive. He can just let the Liliana resolve and sack his tapped Death Shadow because he attacked with it.
Right.
And he just completely forgets his play and scoops. Not only scoops to, you know, in those situations, sometimes you can be like, oh, it doesn't matter too much. He had like a 2% chance of drawing his out anyway. It's just unfortunate. Ivan was still ahead by a decent amount if he untaps that turn. So I guess this Pro Tour gave scrubs like me hope. I make mistakes like this all the time. So if these pinnacles of the game can be making these mistakes and being in Pro Tour finals, you know, maybe I have a chance. You saying I got a shot?
Wasn't it always said that you know, the best pros don't make zero mistakes, but they make fewer mistakes than the average player. And I think the average player makes a lot of mistakes. Like, you know, even myself, and I consider myself when I play like an above average player, but you know, I still make tons and tons of mistakes. But the best pros seem to make very few. But it's not like they're immune. And Twitch chat, I mean, you know, we don't really have to talk about Twitch chat too much, but it's like, man, none of the people talking in there, you know, could even, you know, get a win on the Pro Tour, let alone, you know, it's just, it always makes me so angry the way Twitch chat does stuff. I just have to like minimize it or and whatever.
Like Ivan's mistake, for example, is such a brain fart. It's such a, you know, of the moment, my brain didn't absorb that information properly. For some reason, Ivan's brain just didn't think he could sacrifice a tap creature. And that happens to all of us. And those are the kind of mistakes that are hard to avoid because they're just going to happen to all of us. The mistakes that me and the idiots in Twitch chat make are the tiny little ones from turn one to turn infinite that we don't see, that Ivan does correctly for the rest of the game, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just weird to see. It's going to happen. You know, this is going to happen in future match areas, especially people are nervous no matter how good they are at the game and how often they've been there. So it is definitely going to happen. It just, a lot of them happened in this one Pro Tour. And I think that's because Modern is also quite a complex format.
Even Tom Brady makes mistakes.
Oh,
he's just getting old. He's done. he's done.
So Ivan Flock just had a senior moment.
yeah, essentially.
He's no Tom Brady, so yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's going to happen. Just the more matches you cover, it's just going to happen. So that's, you know, when I did coverage for SCG, the reason it happens so often, or it appears to happen so often, is like we used to cover so many matches every week. At least we don't stick on the match when things like this happen. That's the other thing that they keep doing that's just, it's awkward and it's boring.
I think they balanced it nicely here. They let you hear the judge call for a couple seconds and they jumped to Andrea's match.
A couple seconds is being generous. It's like a couple minutes.
It is being generous. I do like seeing the result of a judge call, but yeah, they jumped. I think this time it was a lot better than the shaping incident, which is the worst case.
Yep. And that's what was great about this Pro Tour. Lots of cool decisions, lots of cool plays, some sweet turn one, double howl one from Ken. That was amazing.
He's also the coolest guy to watch play Magic. He just loves it.
Yeah, and Chion was just going nuts, and what was it, Riley too? They were having a blast. That was a joy.
I was very impressed with Riley in particular. I was watching, I want to say it was like round 13. Jerry came back from, and he was at one and like came back, and it was a super tense, exciting game. You know, it's hard to make Magic exciting, even when they, you know, from an outsider's perspective, just because it's a complicated game and it's hard to figure out what's going on. But so I was watching in the kitchen and he was excited and he was, you know, like an announcer will do for a sports game or something. And my son came in and he sort of like stopped and like he obviously had no idea what was happening on the screen, but like the guy was so excited, like it caught his attention, and he sort of stood there and watched for a minute or two, despite having no idea what was happening, because he felt that like something exciting was happening. And I felt it too, even though, you know, I would feel just following the game and knowing that it's, you know, crazy, but I don't think I've ever seen that on Magic coverage before. And I thought that was really interesting.
It's been a while for sure.
Yeah. Riley is, and it's not being that much of a secret anymore, but Riley is definitely by far the best commentator they have. Mm-hmm. And he is very close to an actual sports commentator, which is something that Cedric and Patrick, I think, are closer to. They're closer to sports commentators than they are, like, gaming commentators. And this is what I've talked about other esports. They don't care if they understand what you're saying. They just care if you're excited. And Riley, even when it's a tiny bit of excitement, is constantly excited with his tone of voice and his way of phrasing things are always exciting. And he's invaluable, I think, to the product at the moment. Marshall Sutcliffe gets a lot of pats on the back from the American pros for being improving and being a very good color commentator at the moment. And he is good at his job. But I think Riley is miles above anything else happening on that product.
His accent also adds a lot. I mean, it's just nice to listen to.
Yeah, he has a beautiful voice for it. This is an example. So you had a fantastic experience with, you know, your son walking in on the Pro Tour. I had the Pro Tour on the TV as well. You know, I had a good weekend watching the Pro Tour, was enjoying it. And it was in the quarters or the semifinals where Jerry is down two games to nothing. And Marshall Sutcliffe reminds us that it's best out of five. So if Jerry loses the next game, he's out. Marshall Sutcliffe then reminds us that Jerry has to win three in a row. Marshall Sutcliffe then reminds us that Jerry's in trouble because he might have to win three games of Magic in a row. You know it's best three out of five. Callie, who was in the background doing stuff in the kitchen, got so annoyed by the constant reminder of what the concept of three out of five was. She started passively aggressively asking the TV, how many does Jerry need to win now? Does Jerry have to win this three? Does 2 + 3 make five? Is that five? You know? And there's a point where I know you have to make it. Their mission statement, it's not his fault, because his mission statement is make it as clear as possible to the viewers. But there's a point where you're dumbing down the game and you're just dumbing down the English language to people, you know?
Yeah, he had a rough weekend. It was definitely not his best. I know he's been a lot better than this weekend. Not all of it was his fault, but there was some points where he could have done a little bit better. But let's move on. I want to talk about real quick about possible bans or unbans, because this has been the talk, of course, because, you know, a deck wins a Pro Tour, so we have to talk about it. And of course, Aaron Forsythe has to make it clear that just because Lantern won and is the winning deck of the Pro Tour doesn't mean a card should be banned.
It also doesn't mean it won't be banned, though, either.
Right. Right. That was my next comment I was going to say. Yeah. I think the deck is still on the watch list, however, so...
Yeah, so I think that's the only negative maybe out of this Pro Tour. I think Lantern's fine. The thing is, it has so many... it has so many ways to get the bridge now with the Wurs. There's so many redundant moving parts. It's so easy to get the lock. Like, we watch Salvato nut draw people, but you can nut draw people in many kind of different ways at the moment. And that deck could be dangerous. A lot of very good players played it, and maybe players didn't test it enough. Like, it is a hard deck to play, but once you get the sequencing of that deck down, it's really strong. And there's a possibility maybe it's too strong. I don't think so, but it's probably on the watch list. The deck itself, and this isn't the deck's fault, has the two cards that I think are the most troublesome in the format from a kind of philosophy point of view. None of the decks they're in are broken, but I think the cards themselves have very similar cards on the ban list, and that's Mox Opal, I think, is the most powerful card left in Modern that's not banned. I think the build around Chromox, which is, you know, you need three artifacts in play to make it work, that's not a hard build around. That's super achievable. And it's been in many decks, including some very consistent and broken decks in the past, and including some decks that have got banned. So I think that is probably the most overtly powerful card left in Modern. Again, I don't think anything's going to get banned anytime soon, but I think that is constantly on the might-have-to-go list. One day that might just have to go. It's too good. And the other card, and this is because cards like Ponder and Preordain are banned, Ancient Stirrings is doing a pretty good Ponder impression nowadays. It's getting better and better the more cards are released. You know, the Eldrazi came out, became even better. These random lands come out, it becomes better. You know, colors, cards, artifacts, lands are always going to get printed. It's always going to get a little bit better year after year. So at what point do we say is enough? And at what point does a deck like Lantern or Amulet Bloom, it's awesome playing Amulet Bloom, or Tron become just so annoying to play against, we eventually ban the Green Ponder?
Yeah, that's definitely a concern. I mean, I think Ensnaring Bridge is definitely a more polarizing card than the ones that you mentioned. If we're talking about wife's watching the game, she was watching the game. And I was like, oh, it's over. I'm like, why? He has like 20 creatures in play. Why can't he just win? Well, he needs the deck. I'm like, what? What do you mean? I'm like, never mind. Just forget it. He's not going to win. Don't worry about it.
Just look at the advantage bar, sweetie.
Yeah, that's correct. I should have told her to look at that. Although sometimes the advantage bar is like never updated, like when you want to. I think that is a great feature that they still are doing. So I think that's nice. But Staring Bridge definitely is like that's the whole deck. It's based around getting Bridge into play. It only takes one Grand Prix to have like four Lantern decks in the top eight and have like a mirror match finals. So it's definitely not impossible, but for now, I think the format still looked...
The mirror match isn't that slow, because whoever gets Mindlock Orb basically just wins, as far as I know. So if I mill your one, and you were for your one, I'll probably just concede, I think is what you're supposed to do. But I'm not 100% on that. I haven't played the mirror since Wurs were introduced.
I think the nice thing about Lantern is that it is a very hard deck to play. I think it's like Amulet Bloom was similar to that as well, though granted they banned that deck. You know, any deck that's really, really hard to play, I think won't get in the hands of so many people that it's crazy oppressive. That doesn't mean that it won't have to be banned. I mean, it's so silly to be talking about bannings at this point in time, in my opinion.
I agree.
But, you know, just to have the discussion that everyone else is having, well, obviously I think that talking about bans is ridiculous at this point. Like, because both Dave and I started saying, well, this was amazing. It was great to watch. It was such diversity. It was exactly what Wizards wanted. Now let's talk about how we unban, how we F it all up and unban something or ban something. It's like, no, just let it play out a little bit and then we'll see how it goes. And if, I mean, prison decks are very unfun to play against, and I will say that from a player perspective. And I've heard that, you know, on Magic Online right now, it's just like everybody like poorly playing Lantern decks at this point, which, you know, could be frustrating, but that could blow over in a week or two, especially if it's a hard deck to play. I would say I'd rather see them print like I don't know, Shatterstorm for one red or something like that.
They've already printed that. Although it's Vandal Blast, it's technically 5 mana to overload it or whatever.
Right, but if there was a destroy for one mana, destroy all artifacts, don't you think that would just completely destroy some decks?
Yeah, that I don't think that would be fun either. The worry I have about Landra.
Right, I mean, that's an extreme example. I'm just saying, like, I'd rather see a new card that. Or, I mean, I don't know how one sideboards for that deck, but if it can be hated out really easily, and, you know, yeah. I've heard people argue that it can't be because, you know, it mills away all your stuff, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I've heard
They've tried that approach with Twin, and they maybe realized that was not the right approach because they printed the correct sideboard cards against Twin, but it was still like, and we still don't want this deck to be around. So I'm not sure if that we're going to be in that kind of situation, but I could definitely see it kind of. They might not try it to go that route again.
How about a one mana artifact, indestructible? You cannot be milled or something. You know,
I mean, there's definitely cards that give you hexproof. So
boom, new designer search 3. I should clearly be in this contest because
the issue is these cards already kind of exist, right? Like
really?
Stony Silence Ascension does what you're saying. You'll stop being milled. They'll see the top of your deck, but you'll stop being milled. Shatterstorm, Vandal Blast, Colligan's Command, these are all great cards against the deck. But it is the issue of it has so much control over draws if it's not in your opening hand. And even sometimes when it is, because some builds run Totsies or whatever, you'll get got.
How about Leyline? I heard Leyline was a suggestion.
Yeah, Leyline's good. Sometimes black is good because it stops them from, you know, going. It stops them from getting Academy Runes going or get their. One of their mill rocks, or I forget which one, but one of them returns
Shredder,
a card from the graveyard for 5 mana. Shredder does. But it has so much redundancy. There's a genuine fear. After the Pro Tour, I don't think what I've seen so far, I don't have this fear. But there is a fear that you hit the nail on the head, and it could have the same projection as the Amulet deck. Started off as a pet deck on MTG Salvation. Got strong, some pros played it. It did well. Pro didn't play it perfectly. Does really well on Magic Online. We're starting to see mirrors everywhere. Dominates a GP. The people who dominate without a GP say it's broken, but you got to learn how to play it. People start to learn to play it. Next event is absolutely dominating the worst deck to play against, and also has a really high bar for learning to play. So people just can't catch up. So the people who have already put in the time to learning it are super advantaged. And that's the same thing that happened to Amulet, right? And that was mega frustrating. I was an Amulet player because I recognized that a bit early. Two or three pros were like, this is broken, I'm going to play it until they ban it. And I don't think this deck is this. I don't think this deck will end up with it, but I can understand people's fears. That's where it seems to be crawling too slowly.
But we're not even remotely in the vicinity of that yet, right? I mean, we just can't be.
Well, we're at the halfway mark, right? And won the Pro Tour. What? So this is where...
This deck has won other tournaments too, but they've been scattered.
Yeah, this is the halfway mark where we still don't think it's broken, but now maybe 4 or 5 pros go, huh, maybe I just won't stop playing this till it's banned. And we'll see how they do. We won't know in 4 or 5, maybe a year from now, 4 or 5 GPs from now. We honestly won't know. But it's on a bit of a trajectory like that. I hope it doesn't end up like that. I like that this is part of the metagame. It's a deck that has to be respected and sideboarded against. And it beats certain decks. It keeps certain decks honest. And what it's still like an 80% match of order decks. It still struggles with burn. The Witchbane Orb plan helps. The Whirl of Witchbane Orb plan helps. But you can still beat them by turn 4 out of a burn deck easy. You know, you can still lock them out of the game by having an idol on and playing, just leaving them on 2 life. Doesn't matter if you can't attack, if they can never play a spell again. So there's definite ways to attack it in decks you can play to punish it. So I think it's fine at the moment.
Yeah.
But we'll see over the next couple months.
Yeah. All in all, I think the format is still amazing. I mean, since the Gitaxian Probe and Golgari Grave Troll bans and the addition of Fatal Push, I think the format has just had this great balance around it. And
Agree. It's
just been very consistent. So I love everything about it. We could definitely talk about unbans. I don't think we need to because, I mean, I agree
well,
with your...
I was going to say, what do you think? Do you think
this? Well, I agree with your Stoneforge Mystic argument, but... Whatever, it's probably not necessary, and I mean, Wizards could go down that route, but I don't think they really need to. Same thing with Blood Red Elf could probably easily come off, but
don't rock the boat right now. It just feels
rock it all over the place. Hashtag free Stoneforge Mystic. She's been a prisoner too long. She's in jail for Jace's sins. They just don't want to see her because she was in a broken standard deck. She does nothing in Legacy at the moment. Not even playable in Legacy. So please. Who cares about a turn three Batterskull? Imagine turn three Batterskull against either of the decks that were in the finals.
Yeah.
Jerry T would just deal 2 damage to Stoneforge and blow up your artifact. And Luis Savato has put on the chokehold 7 turns ago and is wondering why you're still playing the game. You know?
Yep.
I think it's so fair to have a 4-4 lifelinker on turn 4, on turn 3 at the moment. But probably stay banned again.
I think there's a definite chance it could see an unban. But we'll see. Modern's definitely great. I continue to be excited about watching some more Modern. And I will definitely have my eyes on that format because I might be going to, or at least hopefully I can go to SCG Milwaukee. I know with my new job, I might not be able to go anymore, but we will see.
Oh, no.
But hopefully I can make it at least for one day for some side events, whatever.
Imagine if they unban Stoneforge Mystic between then, Connor.
I know.
And you can play Debt and Taxes.
I know. Dude, I'm excited.
Imagine.
I'm not going to get my hopes up, though. So,
yeah,
I wanted to share out really quick our Pro Tour Series fantasy update because we picked 3 teams for the first Pro Tour. I can't remember who was winning. I think I was winning. Nathaniel was second. I think Dave was in last place, if memory serves correctly. But
I don't even remember who I chose. Okay. So I hope you wrote that down.
Of course. That's what I'm saying. My spreadsheet, I only have the current stats right now. I can't tell you what our stats were from. So you, Nathaniel, you have Team Card Hoarder Brazil and Ultimate Guard. I have Channel Fireball, Child's Play, and Genesis. And Dave has Musashi, Ultra Pro, and Snap Cardster. So okay. Dave, I'm pretty sure he was in last place before. He has went to first place now because Team Musashi has exploded all the way to second place in the whole team rankings. They have 89 points. They
Jesus.
Team Snap Cardster also got Dave caught up in well. There's some decent performances from that team. And
nice.
So Dave, you have a total of 217 from his 3 teams. So we still have a close ball game though. This isn't gonna be a blowout like last time. I'm in second place with 198. What hurt me was Team Child's Play. They got very few points from that team. Channel Fireball and Genesis, they just had decent performances, but no out of nowhere as good as Nathaniel's top team. So Nathaniel has the number 1 team in the Pro Standings, Team Ultimate Guard, so that was a good pick. They lead the whole standings with 92 points, thanks to the top 8 from Reduke. But Team Card Hoarder, no big splashes, both around 40 points. So Nathaniel, your total of 174, technically anybody's ball game, but Team Carter might have to break a top pro tour for Nathaniel to get a victory here.
We need somebody on our team to be top 8, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know how many we have qualified for the next one. I'm pretty sure Jack Kiefer is qualified, and I think I read that Ely Cassis hit silver or something. Maybe somebody else, maybe on the Brazil team hit silver, but I think we've got a couple, qualified. But I mean, we've had this discussion. The way it's set up, teams like ours that don't have 6 players that are gold or platinum, not guaranteed. Like, it makes a huge difference. Like, if even just all 6 of our players had been there, I think we'd be in the top, certainly the top 16. We'd move up, from 20th now to certainly top 16, which I think is what all you need to qualify for the team pro tour, I want to say. Well, my main point is it makes it in the way that series is set up, it makes a massive difference if you just are qualified and get those, was it 3 points just for being there? So, yep. 18 points for the whole team. But, we knew that. I knew that going in. So it's not anything surprising. And we just need somebody to spike them.
Does the team pro tour, does that count towards this series? I'm guessing no.
Well, there's 2 more pro tours, and I think it's the one after that.
That's 1 more pro tour than the team back. One.
Really?
Next is a single pro tour, and the one after is the team.
Then it must.
Yeah, I think it does.
It must, but I think that one of the ways to qualify for that team pro tour is to, after the next pro tour, be in the top 16 teams on the pro tour series.
Mm. Okay.
If you had a team of 6 that qualified, for every pro tour, or had somebody that spiked a top 8 or something, that's a good way to get your whole team in, assuming I'm reading that right, which I may not be, and it's always very difficult to figure out how you qualify for the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
Me and Kylie were trying to sit down and figure out when I have to make silver buy. It took us a while. It took us a while.
So you figured it out then? That's yeah. actually impressive.
September 16th. I have to make 12 points by September 16th.
Wow. Okay.
Is that when the new system comes into play?
Yeah, and then no one knows what happens then. We know we transfer into the new system. But yeah, but does that mean we go straight into like, does my first quarter fall off? Or do we all start at zero? I don't know. They might have said it somewhere, but there's like five articles.
I can't imagine everyone starts at zero.
Yeah, I don't think it does.
That would be a good way to save money. Everyone's off the Pro Tour.
Yeah. Start again, plebs. Start again. Yeah, I think it goes into the rotating system, but it could not be less clear. Could not be less clear. Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens with our Team Series Fantasy League. I'll make sure to keep up with what we had from the previous Pro Tour, the points.
I never got my trophy.
It's still in the mail. I'm sorry.
Oh,
all right, guys. Are you guys ready for Card Hoarder After Dark? No. Okay.
Yeah. No. Just giving.
Yeah. 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 I was on mute, so we're fine.
All right. Let's do it.
We're listening in on radio.
Welcome to Card Hoarder After Dark, your radio station for mature people, mature content. I am your DJ, DJ Dave, and today's mature, sensual topic will be hangover foods. We've been talking about parties, we've been talking about party planning, we've been talking about foods, it all comes together. What is your favorite hangover or maybe just after drinking on the way home food?
Mm. Yes, it's a very sensual topic, Dave.
Yeah, they're all sensual topics, Connor. They're all sensual.
Before we start this, I want to start this off with a completely inappropriate thing to say, which is I always half joke around that hangover is the only thing in the world stopping me from being an alcoholic because I love drinking, but I hate hangovers, and it's enough to make me stop the night before. So it's always like a half joke, kind of a, you know, kind of sad at the same time.
I hope so. I would hope your health is up there too.
My health is, you know, well, I always say because I actually don't drink as much Diet Coke as I used to, but I said, yeah, but you know, those will be the old years. You know, I'll be old and decrepit anyway. I'm going to enjoy myself now.
Right. That's future Nathaniel's problem.
Yeah, exactly. And once you get there, you really just start steering into the skid. You just start drinking heavily if you're that old and you're not feeling great. I'm just, what's the point in letting up at that point and getting like two extra years?
Exactly.
Just go full hot. Oh, what the?
Whoa.
Sorry, that's my fire alarm.
Is your house on fire?
Yeah.
Nah, they replaced the smoke detectors today, and
oh god,
we had a bunch of them that they're all connected too. So if one goes off, the whole goddamn house does. So hang on a second.
Oh jeez.
Well, let me go try to deal with that. Hang on a second.
Okay, everything okay?
Yeah, I mean they're changing the ones in the basement, and they were doing it earlier, and it kept going off. And then there was a guy outside. He's calling 911 because he knows we're at work. I was like, all right, everyone, chill. All right, I'm back though. Let's do this because I think it's going to keep going off. So
okay, I'll go first then. Since you two are American and our food might be a bit different, I think my favorite walking home kind of drunk food, there's two ones. There's traditional, we have kind of an American style slice, like not dollar, it's a bit more expensive, but big slice of pizza, garlic sauce. We all know that's boring. But in Ireland, we get like a bag of chips. I guess you call them fries, but they're kind of different here. Big bag of chunky chips, battered sausage, and garlic dip. That's my walking home drunk.
That's it. When you get the drunk munchies, but that's not a hangover food.
Well,
we'll make you more hungover.
Yeah, but it soaks it up. It's soakage, so you're not too bad in the morning. Yeah. And then hangover food. My favorite thing to do, or was my favorite thing. Now I eat vegan a lot at home. But when I was younger, what I would do is we would go down to the Tesco's, so like whatever you call it, the equivalent of Walmart, and we'd get a pre-roasted chicken. And we just got wraps and mayonnaise and cheese and spinach, and we just make big hungover wraps. And that was one of my favorite things to do with friends, when, you know, when you all wake up in the same house on the same floor.
Sure. Nice. All right, I guess I'll go next. Coming home, it's usually... Lately, it's been McDonald's or Taco Bell, which is those are like the only two places that are open usually.
Ugh,
so yeah, it's awful.
That's rough. That's rough. Yeah,
that's the danger zone.
It's the only time I ever have either of those places. So my wife and I, we don't really drink that often. So
I thought you were gonna finish that with it's the only time I eat in those places. It's also the only time I have diarrhea the next morning. So.
So that's the key. I don't order that much. It would be like a burger and fries, like from McDonald's. And the McDonald's burgers are pretty small too. And then if it's Taco Bell, it's like a taco or like a burrito or something like pretty small, but like something.
That's restrained. They have pretty small tacos.
Yeah.
I like that Connor basically ignored that comment. He's probably thinking, I'm just gonna edit that out. I'll just edit that out. The thing Dave just said.
Yeah,
it's mature sensual content.
Hangover food. I mean, it's pizza, man. You can't just like ignore it. It's the definite go-to. Whether it's the go-to for like if you're in a group, everybody just order a huge pizza, or if it's right now, it's the thing. It's the best thing that delivers. That's super greasy. I will add that having like a Coke as well. I need something really sugary for that liver to get back on track. Yeah. A B12 complex as well is also like a necessity. I've heard that's also like a good way to cure a hangover as well.
I've heard a lot of things. One of my I digress with this, but we came home from a restaurant one time with a group of friends, and my neighbor was sitting outside, and we just got to chatting, and she had been drinking heavily too, and she's like, "Oh, have you ever taken a charcoal tablet?" I'm like, "What? No, I haven't." And
this is great. This is great.
Come in here, but spray your house.
I think they might be, man.
Are they spraying your house?
Yes, they are. No, they're not spraying it, but I hang on. I gotta go talk to the fireman now. it's like when I'm getting doxxed, man. Hang on a second.
Don't edit this out. Don't edit this out.
All right, hang on. I'll be back. All right, I'm back. Not to rush us along, but they're gonna do another smoke detector. So it's two fire trucks. Like there's like eight firemen outside. I'm like, Jeez. Listen, we're fine here. Appreciate you coming by.
That is quick response. You guys have quick response. If a fire alarm goes off in my house, no one cares.
Yeah, man. I don't know. It's just because one dude outside called 911 though.
Yeah.
You know? Sure.
There's just somebody walking by. Interestingly, my neighbor who lives, you know, it's a two-story or a two-unit building. My neighbor is a firefighter. So he's probably like, wait, there's a fire at my house? I didn't see him out there, though. All right, so charcoal. I'll just move on from that. But yeah, the charcoal pill, I'll say, I don't think it worked, but it's supposed to, you know, soak up the alcohol in your stomach or whatever. But it does turn your poop black. So if
no
you
thanks.
Take it, know that. But for hangover food, for me, there's a place that does these sausage, egg, and cheese sandwiches Ooh. That are amazing hangover Sounds food. Good. And I'm talking like next morning, feeling hungover, good way to start the day. I used to get the drunk munchies, but I don't so much anymore because I try to like, I don't diet per se, but I try to like do fewer calories. So I'm like, if I'm drinking, I'm already way, you know, having infinite empty calories. So I try to fight it.
It depends on the night,
like,
for
chips,
sure.
Probably. Yeah, sure. But for me, probably chips. Doritos is like, there's a spicy chili Doritos that, man, I could just.
You guys shame me for Taco Bell.
What? Oh, Doritos and Taco Bell. It's not even the same vicinity.
Well, sometimes it's the same thing.
Or if you have if they have the Dorito taco. Which is,
yeah,
I've never had. You know, I've only had Taco Bell once in my life.
Really?
Same. Yeah.
I give a crap. It wasn't as bad as its reputation.
Well,
says.
I'm always just like, it was fine. You know, just like McDonald's is fine. It's just more like, you know, an hour later, it's not fine anymore, and I feel sick.
See, you just gotta have to have the right things. That's all I'm gonna say. Right things.
I guess
moderation too.
moderation matters, but I'm always just like, for Taco Bell, I'm like, how can a pound of beef cost a dollar? Like, how, and they're making profit off the, how? How is this
it's
happening?
It's not beef, man.
It's beef substitute.
Yeah. I thought of something. Do you guys have spice boxes over there?
I don't know what that is.
You get,
I don't think
they
so.
They get like some kind of box, whatever box you want. You get like the, if you guys have added like the chunky style call them steak cut fries. That's kind of what our chips are like over here. And in it, you have like pieces of chicken. So like pop, kind of like popcorn chicken, breaded chicken, a couple chicken wings, like breaded chicken wings.
In your French fries?
Yeah, in the French fries.
Wow.
Again, ticker kind of steak cut French fries, all in a box. And then they put like salt, cooked onion, some like spring onion, and spices over it. And it's kind of a little bit hot. They like cut up some chili and they put it over it. And then you have like a sweet and sour dipping sauce for it. It's like a Chinese thing over here.
Weird.
You get it out of our Asian kind of
I mean, you know, we probably have it. I've not seen it or tried it, but, you know, it probably exists.
It's great. I'm very tempted to order one right now since we've started talking about this.
First, you got to get drunk and then you can order it, Dave.
Deal.
After dark is mainly just us getting fat, pretty much.
Fat and drunk. Yeah. I mean, like a lot of them are related to alcohol for sure. Yeah. Which I love talking about. So
it is great. I guess I'll mention my number two when thinking about it. So Dave, that burger place that I took you to, it's called Wild Burger.
Oh yeah.
A juicy, greasy burger is definitely on top of the list for sure. But the delivery portion is usually key because like when you're hungover, you don't want to go anywhere. So that's why pizza's on my number one list.
You know, I don't mind cooking myself when I'm hungover.
Can't do it.
I wouldn't mind making my own, like, nice, greasy burger. Depends how hungover I am, I guess. I'm a tick man. So I'm either fine the next morning or in trouble. There doesn't seem to be in between with me anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely get hungover when I should, like, you know, go to bed totally sober and just be hungover anyway. And that's the worst. You know, it's just like... You know you're getting old when that happens. You go to bed sober and you had, you know, three beers and you're just feeling like crap the next day. So, and it I always, you know, it's never going to happen to me, but here we are and that's what happens. Sad but true.
All right, Dave, good after dark topic. I had one in my back pocket, but I'm glad we chose this one. You know, coming off the back of the Super Bowl, so that's usually a day where people enjoy a few refreshments for sure. So, on the nose, a good topic for after dark. If you ever want to submit a topic, definitely hit us up on one of our contacts, which we'll get into in a second. But I think that's going to do it for this episode. I'd like to remind you about the upcoming premier events on Magic Online this week. We have the Standard Mox Playoff on Saturday and the Sealed Mox Monthly on Sunday. For contacts, hit me up on Twitter at Connor P. O'Donnell. If you have an amazing after dark topic, please let me know. Otherwise, check out the other podcasts I work on, Game Podcast with Jerry Thompson and Brian Gottlieb. The next episode should be great because Jerry will probably talk about his second place finish, so that will be amazing. And WCW versus NWO podcast, the wrestling podcast that Dave and I do. So, Dave, Nathaniel, where can our listeners contact both of you guys?
They can get a hold of me on Twitch. I stream 4 or 5 days a week. Dave C is my tag there. And I'm on Twitter. That's DaveC89. Both of them spelled S-E-A.
And for me, Nathaniel at cardholder.com. You can shoot me an email and we can exchange via the old-fashioned way of email.
Sounds good.
None of this social... What is this social media? I don't know anything about
it. We need to get you on Snapchat, Nathaniel. That's our next step.
Snapchat. I tried it once. I was like, I don't get it. And then that was it. I sound like the old curmudgeon.
That was a joke. That's like a young person thing. It's too young for me, even for me. I can't get it. All right, guys, I think that's going to wrap up this episode. Remember, you can find the show every week on cardholder.com. Next week, we'll probably be discussing the Magic Online news that's going to drop later this week. But until then, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.